Haiti is a small country about the size of Belgium, located in the Caribbean on the island of Hispaniola. It is on the west side of that. In this video, I'm going to have a look at its economic history. Christopher Columbus arrived in Hispaniola in 1492 with 40 men. They built Navidad Fort with the wood from their shipwreck. Columbus went back to Spain, and when he returned, the natives had killed all 40 men. There were estimated to be between 100,000 and 8 million natives in Hispaniola when Columbus arrived. By 1548, less than 500 remained. They were killed by a combination of Spanish brutality, forced labour, and disease. The discovery of gold in the early 1500s meant that the island became of key strategic importance, as efforts to mine this gold were accelerated. In order to fix their labour shortage due to the loss of the original natives, the Spaniards depopulated the entirety of the Bahamas. By 1600, they were already importing African slaves to try to resolve the scarcity of labour. These slaves would later become the Haitian peasantry. The Spaniards completely exhausted the gold supply in Hispaniola by 1630. In the mid-1600s, the discovery of gold in Mexico and Peru drew Spanish immigrants away from Hispaniola. By 1640, they had virtually deserted the island. However, the French started to arrive in significant numbers. By 1697, the French controlled the entire western third of Hispaniola, and the colony of Saint Domingue became the most profitable colony in the entire world. The French built this economy exporting sugar, coffee, cotton, and indigo. They relied almost exclusively on African imported slave labor. The French imported many thousands of slaves at the following rates: 4,000 per annum in the 1720s, 5,000 per annum in 1753, 10,000 per annum in 1771, 27,000 per annum in 1786, and 40,000 per annum between 1787 and 1789. By 1790, there were over 450,000 slaves in San Domingo. On the 14th of August, 1791, slaves held a voodoo ceremony in Bois Camain in northern Haiti. A week later, the slaves rose up against their masters and initiated a 12-year-long war. General Leclerc, Napoleon's brother, led an invasion force from France to Haiti in 1804, and his forces were overcome by yellow fever and defeated by the Haitian army. Now, let's take a quick break to hear about my fantastic economics course, and when we return, we will see what happened to Haiti after the revolution.
If you like Academic Agent's content on this channel, sign up for a course on the Academic Agency. He's now offering Foundations of Economics. Click the link in the show description and level up your econ knowledge.
The ravages of war destroyed the basis of the plantation society in Haiti. On the eve of the slave uprising, San Domingo supplied 60% of the world's coffee. But coffee was not even its biggest export. That was sugar. Plantations required intensive capital and labor, typically between 150 and 300 hectares of land, and a large labor force working practically around the clock. Between 1790 and 1805, the population of Haiti decreased from 520,000 to 380,000 due to the war toll and expulsion of the French. The total labor force was reduced by 20%. Furthermore, the former slaves simply destroyed the plantations, and with them, the capital stock. In November 1803, almost the entire colony, formerly flourishing, was a big cemetery of ashes and debris. Tens of thousands of cultivators and soldier cultivators had died. The huts, if they were still standing, were deserted. The cities were burnt out. The sugar mills had been demolished or showed the stumps of the carbonized beams. The majority of the plantations had been reduced to ashes. Only the small plots planted with coffee and food crops spoke of life in the country. To show the impact of the destruction, we can have a look at the relative level of exports. In 1795, sugar exports were just 1.2% of their level in 1789. Coffee exports in 1795 were just 2.8% of the level in 1789. Cotton and indigo export industries were practically wiped out. Now, during the colonial period, there arose a class called the mulattoes, who were the mixed race offspring of French masters and their slave mistresses. The group had become an elite in their own right and owned their own slaves by 1791. This group, combined with the upper echelons of the black Haitian military, formed a new ruling class. They sought to maintain the existing structure of the plantations. The mulattoes needed money to supply themselves with arms in case of any new invasion from the French. They did not wish to work themselves because they believed that the elite ruling class should not work. Haiti had a lot of free land and a newly free peasantry, but the new Haitian ruling elite feared that such peasants would not be easily controlled under such conditions, so they used their military to force the peasant population back onto the plantations, effectively reinstituting forced labour. Jean-Jacques Dessalines nationalised all of the land in Haiti and then leased it back to the mulatto plantation owners. The population was divided into soldiers and workers. Anyone who was not a soldier would be forced to work at gunpoint in the plantations. Thus, slavery endured in all but name in Haiti after the revolution. Dessalines was murdered in 1806, and Haiti then split into two kingdoms. The northern kingdom was taken over by Henri Christophe, pictured on the right here, and the southern kingdom was taken over by Alexandre Pechon. The forced labour system was ended in 1809 in the south and was effectively over by 1816 in the more aristocratic north. Pechon adopted the Napoleonic Code and instituted a land reform in 1809. This ruled that large estates needed to be divided equally between offspring when inherited. This resulted in a continual subdivision of landholdings becoming smaller and smaller with each generation until reaching 0.75 hectares or less by 1995. This created a permanent peasantry of subsistence farmers. After Jean-Pierre Boyer unified Haiti in 1820, he maintained this system. Now, this system of inheritance created some odd effects. Every generation, the population grew, but the per capita land held by each household reduced because it kept on being divided by the offspring. Thus, Haitian GDP per capita was continually flat from 1809 onwards, as you can see in the bottom graph there. The top one shows the rising population. This also had the effect of severe soil erosion, since peasants had to rely on their own holdings exclusively, and therefore there was no crop rotation. This also had the effect of making the Haitian state completely predatory. Since the peasants were now landowners in their own right, they could no longer be forced to work for exports, and so they were taxed instead. Thus, holding high office in Haiti became the exclusive preserve of a ruling elite. Whichever faction was in power could then use the offices of state to plunder the peasant population through taxation. Corruption at the level of government thus became a way of life. Rival factions and coups were common. From 1843 to 1915, Haiti had 22 presidents, 11 of whom were in office for less than a year. All but five were deposed violently. This period saw more than 100 coups, uprisings, or attempted coups. The combination of soil erosion, kleptocracy, constant social turmoil, and the fact that every generation would be poorer than the last one on a per capita basis, if you include land in that calculation, meant that by 1915, Haiti was one of the poorest countries in the world. The country had effectively been in a state of civil war for 70 years. It had gone from being the most prosperous colony in the world to the poorest and least productive country in the Caribbean. And you can have a look at a comparison of Haiti to its direct neighbor there, the Dominican Republic, which is on the same island of Hispaniola on the east side. And you can see how it compares to South America, the Caribbean, and Central America as well. Incidentally, most of those countries maintained a mixture of small landowners and large landowners. And you could argue that one of the reasons for Haiti's very poor productivity was the fact of these continually diminishing land holdings, especially when you're growing things like coffee and sugar, you need economies of scale. And of course, the continual fighting and the heavy taxation didn't help either. By 1915, Haiti was practically bankrupt and in severe debt. Haiti had taken out pretty big foreign loans, chiefly from the USA, in 1874, 1875, 1896, and 1910. By 1910, Haiti's credit rating was such that no country in the world would lend to it at any interest rate. Thus, the Haitian government took to lending from its domestic capital market, and it took domestic loans in 1911, 1912, 1913, and in 1914 as well. It was, by this point, for all intents and purposes, bankrupt. So then, in 1915, the USA invaded and occupied Haiti. President Woodrow Wilson gave the order, and he claimed it was to ward off the increased influence of Germany. But I think that the real reason was to ensure that Haiti paid its debts back. The Americans established law and order for 19 years of peace and forced the Haitians to repay all of their long-standing debts. The debt had been halved by 1930 and it was fully paid off by 1947. The Americans also drastically improved the transport network in Haiti and established a school system. However, after the USA pulled out of Haiti in 1934, the transport network was not maintained and left to deteriorate. From reading around, I'm led to believe that you can still see the vestiges of the transport network that the Americans built even today in 2020. The education system was effectively abandoned. However, the Americans also helped to modernize the Haitian armed forces, and this resulted in a virtual police state after they left. The military, between 1934 and 1957, called virtually all of the political shots. This did, however, at least temporarily, put an end to the constant civil wars that had plagued Haiti before 1915. Sadly for Haiti, it also laid the groundwork for the rise of a man called François Duvalier, also known as Papa Doc. Duvalier became president in 1957. He ruthlessly persecuted all forms of opposition. He retired and exiled the entire officer class of the military and replaced them, the entire top brass, with personal cronies. He then brought the judiciary, the business community, the parliament, the media, and even the Catholic Church under his complete control. Duvalier created a new elite, a new support structure for his regime, which rested on three pillars. First, you have the Tonton Mokout, which was used to intimidate and liquidate people. All government officials had to join this group to prove their allegiance to Papa Doc. Next, you had the voodoo clergy, also known as the Mambos, which was very influential with the peasant population and now preached that Papa Doc had divine powers. The third part of the new elite were the chefs de section, which were local sheriffs, and they acted as the arm of the government in every community. When Papa Doc died in 1971, he had amassed $150 million in personal wealth, when the total GDP of Haiti was $362.8 million. This means that Papa Doc's personal total wealth as a percentage of Haitian GDP was 41.3%. His son, Jean-Claude Duvalier, dubbed Baby Doc, then became the new president. Now, Papa Doc had built structures that were only loyal to him. So when Baby Doc took over, he tried to transition back to the old Haitian system. He moved away from the voodoo clergy and so on, and back to the traditional elites. He focused his rule on a more technocratic and administrative basis, but was no less predatory than his father. When he was overthrown in 1986, having amassed $1.6 billion, it was at a time when the total Haitian GDP was $2.31 billion. That means that his wealth as a percentage of Haitian GDP was 69.3%, quite a staggering number. Then from 1986 onward, sadly for Haiti, we see more bloodshed and turmoil. More civil war ensued after Baby Doc was overthrown. A man called Jean-Bernard Aristide was elected president in 1990 with a two-thirds majority, but then he was ousted by the military and exiled in 1991. And then he was reinstated by direct intervention by the USA in 1994. Aristide became president again in 2001, but suffered a second military coup in 2004. Then, in 2010, the natural disaster of the earthquake struck Haiti, at a time when the country was experiencing its habitual civil strife. Haiti today remains one of the poorest countries in the world, ranked 169 out of 189 nations, with a GDP per capita of just $756. Unfortunately, the history of Haiti shows what happens when political leaders see their offices as nothing but seats of plunder for their own personal gain.
If you like Academic Agents content on this channel, sign up for a course on the Academic Agency. He's now offering Foundations of Economics. Click the link in the show description and level up your econ knowledge.
Be sure to like this video and subscribe, and if you really like my content, maybe consider joining the channel or donating or maybe even buy a mug. I am grateful for all of your support. Now get out.